irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, this is your favorite host from the Writer's Block, Jim Christina, coming to you directly from deep within the Rocky Mountains and Sawtooth Mountain Ranges in lower western Idaho. And tonight, if you're like my friend J. Michael Michael, we love talk radio and we're just ready to get rocking and rolling. So right now you got the Writer's Block going. Sit back, open another box of chocolates, pop another bottle of wine, just like Bobby Jean Bell, and it's all coming at you right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
Christina is not right here. He is at home enjoying
another... studio.
Oh, there he is.
I am here.
Jimmy, what a shot. Hey, how are you?
I wanted to do that live opening just so you would be confused, Russ, and apparently it worked.
It did. Except I didn't know it was live.
We have music. We have music.
Oh, let it go. I'm going to
Well, I figured what better music to open for a romance western than the big country. Hello, Russ, my friend.
Hi, how are you?
I am, you know what? I am feeling so much better. I just cannot believe it.
Well, everyone missed you.
Well, I got so sick off that last infusion of antibiotics that I wound up back in the hospital, as you know, for another week. Yeah. And but I'm home. I've been home since Monday, and I am feeling absolutely fantastic.
I'm so glad. I really am. I was very concerned about you for a while, and then I thought, nah, he's just too mean. Nothing's going to happen.
I actually am too mean to die, and so God just put another handicap on me, which is just being here in my home office, and it's good. I
thought I was the handicap.
No. That will never be. But I understand you have one hell of a guest tonight. And I just wanted to say I'll be listening live and I'll be back full time next week when we have a young lady on that's I don't even know what she's written. But another romance novel, I'm assuming. But we will be back. And tonight's guest sounds fantastic. She's also wonderful. Her name is decidedly Brit, I can tell you. I was listening to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Know why? It's because her last name is, Downing and Downing Street. Right. That's where the prime minister lives. So
exactly. Number 10. So we'll just call her number 10. How's that?
There we go.
I'm sure she's there. So number 10, are you listening?
I am.
I wish I were going to be here with you tonight, but I will be listening and I'm here in spirit. But I am once again coming to you live from my secret studio outside of Sawtooth and Rocky Mountains. And I will be signing off here right now. And Russ, take it away. And I know you'll have a great show because your last one was phenomenal.
Thanks, Jimmy. You feel better. And we'll look forward to hearing you all next week.
I'll be back next week. And Miss Downing, I hope you have a wonderful time with Russ. He's a great host.
Well, thank you very much. And you get better soon.
Oh, I will for sure. And I'm signing off. Y'all have a good show. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jimmy. Thank you. Well, welcome to the Writer's Block. Since Jim has sort of already given a little preview to our guest, let me introduce her right now. A native New Yorker, she spent most of her life living in the UK. And Andrea Downing currently divides her time between the canyons of city streets and the wide open spaces of Wyoming. Her background in publishing and English language teaching is transferred into fiction writing. And her love of horses, ranches, rodeo, and just about anything else Western is reflected in her award-winning historical and contemporary Western romances and women's literature. Andrea is a member of Women's Writing the West, the Women's Fiction Writers Association, and RWA, the Romance Writers of America. Andrea's first book, Loveland, has been followed by no less than 9 additional novels, including her latest, Always on My Mind. Andrea Downing, welcome to the Writer's Block.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Russ, for having me.
We are so glad to have you. So, Andrea, you are speaking to us now from Hamptons in New York, correct?
Yes. I'm at the very end of Long Island in East Hampton tonight.
And as we spoke, I used to live out on the island as well. And I looked up, we were about an hour and 10 minutes away from each other.
Yeah, right.
And you live, though, out in the country. I mean, I just happened to take a quick satellite view of it, and it's just trees. It's your house. The whole area is obliterated with trees. So that must be very beautiful.
Yes, I'm very lucky. I'm next to an area called Cedar Point Park, and about, you know, walking distance from the bay beaches.
Uh-huh.
So it is very lovely out here.
And how's the weather today?
It got hot. We're having a very warm evening tonight.
Oh, well, that's nice. And
so
it's later out there.
Sorry?
And it's later out there, and it's still nice and warm, huh?
That's correct. Yes.
So, well, let's get right into it. Let's talk about, well, first of all, let's just dive into your book, the newest one, which is called Always on My Mind. And let's start out. Why don't you give us a little thumbnail sketch, what the story is about?
Well, it's about a rancher in Wyoming, of course, who happens to pick up a hippie girl at a dance hall one night and bring her home, and they fall in love. But
what an unusual story.
Yeah. But
yes.
He doesn't express himself very well, and she was headed to California, to Haight-Ashbury, and doesn't understand him, and he really doesn't understand her. And eventually she heads off, and for the next 4 years they live apart. But as the title says, they keep each other always on their mind. So that's the basic story, without giving away too much.
No, we don't want to do that. Otherwise, nobody's going to buy the book.
Yeah.
But I tell you, I enjoyed the story very much. It was interesting to me, especially because, you know, I'm a child of the 60s and 70s. And one of the things that struck me about your characters is that they seemed a bit naive. And I'm comparing that to today. And I was trying to remember if I was that naive back in 1972. At the time, I was just a year out of high school. So she was probably just a couple years older than me. And she was naive about the ways of the world. I mean, I thought it was interesting. One of the things was that the guy she met, Coop, he had a pickup truck. And she got in the truck and she said she'd never been in a pickup truck except the one that her dad's business had. And I thought, that's really odd, you know, but maybe coming from California.
But where are you living? Yeah. You're living out west.
Yes, know? That's true.
I'd never been in a pickup truck until about, I don't know, 5 years ago.
No, are you serious?
Yeah, I'm absolutely serious.
Oh, my God. And it must have been in Wyoming, too, right?
Well, I only bought the place in Wyoming back in 2012.
Uh-huh.
Though I had been out west many times, but, you know, you go as a tourist and you're traveling with your husband, my husband, or my parents or whatever, and you're in a car. Nobody I knew ever owned a pickup truck. Not here.
I see.
Not on Long Island. I mean, now pickup trucks, you know, they were like a father, electricians, workmen, you know, mm-hmm. they all ride pickup trucks, but nobody buys one just to ride around in.
Goodness. Well, I liked the fact that she was not worldly yet. In fact, that's what her experience, I think that's what she was craving in her trip with her friends to go to California, was
exactly,
to expand her horizons.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she was brought up, you know, in Boston. She went to high school in Boston. She went to a girls' college, as she says. And suddenly, you know, she decides she wants to see more of the world. So she is very naive. And I think women in the late 60s and 70s were fairly naive. It was just the end or the beginning. I don't know which one, the sexual revolution.
And women's lib, too.
Exactly.
I graduated high school in 1971. And I was amazed that just in the last few years that I found out that women were not allowed to have credit cards unless their husband signed for it.
Yeah.
And that just astounds me. And of course, back in 1971, 72, I don't remember that there was anything wrong with the way things were. But I look back now and I say, oh my gosh, we were jerks.
Yeah. And, a woman couldn't have a mortgage on her own without a counter signatory. So it was.
And now we have women running those banks that give out the loans.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
Yes. Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. So tell me, how did you get the idea for the book in the first place?
Well, my place in Wilson, which is just outside of Jackson, has a fairly well-known dance hall. And I used to go in, when I'm up in Wilson, and it's all very nice. There's live music on Sunday nights and so on. And I discovered that the dance hall had had a fight between the ranchers and hippies back in the late 60s. Or in the early 70s, that the hippies used to go in there and, the ranchers would start a bust up with them. So this fascinated me because you could see the two very, very disparate sections of society there. The ranchers on one hand, who are up probably before dawn and work until sundown, and, they're tied to the land. They have no snow days, no days off. You have the flu, you're still working. And here are these freewheeling hippies who are smoking pot and traveling all around with long hair and so on and no jobs. And I thought, well, yeah, but what if, what if a man and a woman from, one from each group fell in love? And that's how the idea for the story, took off.
Now, you started writing, I think your first, well, I'm not sure, because as I looked through the list of books, I saw one was published back in 2013. When did you actually start writing?
Oh, about age 6.
Oh, okay. was your first book published?
I remember scribbling in one of those. Sorry?
Oh, no, I say, when was the first book published?
The first book was published in, it was either 2012 or 2013. I think it's copyright 2012, actually, Loveland.
Okay. And after that first book, and because obviously all of your energies were going into that one book because it was the first one, obviously, when did you start to formulate the idea for this one?
For this one? Oh, only about 4 years ago when I read that bit about the fights between the ranchers and the hippies. But it sort of took me a while to, you get an idea and I think about it for a very long time, what I'm going to do with the story.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of let it mature, if you like, in my brain. And then I finally get down to the computer and start. I always have to more or less have a beginning and an end. How I get from one to the other develops as I start writing.
And you know that. So, no, go ahead, please.
Yeah, so, that has to go on. That takes a while. And then, of course, you keep reading it and rereading it and letting friends read it and, fine-tune it and then send it in and so on and so forth. So it is a very long process.
Do you think it's a good idea to have your friends critique your work?
Probably not. well, I try and switch off a bit And hopefully they're all very honest. My daughter often reads my work, and she is excruciatingly honest, which is excellent. It's very good, because she comes to it. She's 36, and mm-hmm. she comes to it with a totally, totally different eye and totally different considerations to what I have. So that's really good. It's just, it doesn't matter really who reads it, but it's good to get different views of what you've written.
Well,
because
you don't know
who's going to pick up the book, basically.
That's true, too. Well, we're going to have to take a quick little break. You'll stick with us, I hope. You're not going anywhere.
Nope.
And when after the break here, we're going to talk a little bit about the similarities between now and 1970s. And I think it's really good that you brought in, you know, your daughter's ideas, because her perspective is so different. So after the break, we'll come back and discuss that just a little bit. You're listening to The Writer's Block.
Hey, J. Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything on that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is a .com, and they have it all, from music to sports to self-help, but they even have talk. So why don't you sit back in your favorite chair, put your feet up, tune into LATalkRadio.com, and give us a listen. Guaranteed to be fun for you, and we're coming at you right now.
All righty, J. Michael. If you're just joining us, this is The Writer's Block. I'm Russ Avison, and we are chatting with Andrea Downing and discussing her latest book, Always on My Mind. And just before the break, we were talking about your daughter kind of critiquing your book, and she kind of comes in between the 1970s and right now as far as her age goes. So how does she view the transition, or the differences, I should say, between the 1970s and now versus how you viewed it?
Wow. That's really difficult to explain. You know, she is absolutely a feminist, totally a feminist, mm-hmm. and totally for equality of all peoples. So if you say anything that's even joking, that's vaguely could be construed as racist or against equality of any kind, she will be down on you like a ton of bricks. she is completely in the moment for now, whereas I think, you know, my upbringing was totally different. I don't want to go into certain things, because then I will end up sounding I don't know, not racist, but naive. But we were very naive in the 60s.
Oh, I think so. But you know, that's a really great point that you bring up, is that you said if somebody says something that's even the least little bit unequal or racist, that your daughter would come down on them immediately. And
yeah.
In the 70s, you're talking about the women being naive. But do you think that maybe the women still had all these thoughts, they just were not ready to come down like a ton of bricks on everybody yet?
Well, I think, of course, they had these ideas, because otherwise we wouldn't have had Roe versus Wade, for instance, in 73. Mm-hmm. I think it was January 73. We wouldn't have had Billie Jean King playing that tennis match in, I'm not sure of the year, it was 74, 75, something like
right.
that.
Uh-huh.
You know, the thoughts had to be there, plus all the women's lib books that were coming out. And, you know, that was just beginning to take off, really. But I don't know, you know, it took a while to gain momentum, I think.
Well, you know, even today, I mean, you still read about, I mean, we had the, like the Harvey Weinsteins, and there's still
yeah.
so much going against women, but they've come so far. I mean, you have come so far, and I personally, I applaud it. I wish you'd come further. I think that personally, I think the biggest problem we have in our society is that we look and, you know, so many people are looking, well, who's better, men or women? And it really, that isn't the issue. It's that we're very different. And if we could start looking at the complements between each other and work together, because we all have our pluses and our minuses, and if we put it together, we can be a lot stronger. But it's so hard to get over that. And I think we see that in the problem with race in this country, too. And boy, we're getting off subject here.
Well, that's very good.
So tell me, you spent a lot of time in the UK.
I did. I lived there for 40 years.
Goodness. What was your reason for going there, and why did you come back?
Well, my reason for going there was I went to do a master's degree. There was a professor at the university that I went to who had published one of my professors at my undergraduate college. And he was a fairly well-known poet, and so I just decided to do my master's degree there and study with him. And I then got mixed into a whole group of poets, ended up editing a poetry magazine with my future husband and husband. And that, you know, I stayed. And I stayed, and I had Crystal, and, you know, the rest is sort of history. It went on for 40 years. She then decided to go to university in the United States, and that was fine, sort of, but no, it was fine. And when she graduated, when Crystal graduated, she got a job in New York, she got an apartment, and I began to see the writing on the wall. By then I was divorced, and at the same time, I was suffering a little bit with an illness. So that caused a problem. And then the British government decided to also raise the tax of what we called non-doms, non-domiciled, which was what I was. So it was a sort of perfect storm.
I see.
Telling me to head back to New York. And so I did. And I
gotcha.
Headed back to New York in 2008.
So What inspired this love and interest in the West? Because your books have all of the, well, you love cowboys. That's quite obvious. So, okay, we won't go in that direction too much. But what was it that, just got you going about the West?
Well, for some reason, I always had a thing about the West. I think I was brought up on a diet of television Westerns. And that love really never left me. And while Crystal was growing up, we discovered that we could go to dude ranches for vacations, and that became an absolute habit. We've done some 25, 30 different dude ranches, both working ranches and, you know, resort ranches, all sorts throughout the West. The British school system helped a great deal because they get off a month at Christmas and a month at Easter and then 2 months in the summer. So while Christmas was, you know, a family thing, Easter we always went to a ranch in Arizona. And then in the summer, we started going to ranches further north in the Rockies, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana. And this went on for a very long time.
Were there ranches in England?
No, there are no ranches in England.
No, I don't know. I mean, in March, I was in France and Holland, and I was supposed to go to England. I've never been. And then pandemic hit, and I had to get the heck out of Dodge real quick because they were closing things down. So I never had my chance. So that's why I'm asking. I don't know. No cowboys in England, huh?
No cowboys in England. I think the closest cowboys are in the Camargue in France.
I didn't see them either. okay, yeah. That's all right. That's all right. So you came back. Did you, and I know you said you started doing your first writing when you were six, but were you back in the U.S. when you started, you know, seriously writing?
Yes. I mean, I had written some things while in the UK, and but they were mostly like travel journals and stuff like that for a newspaper. So, yeah, I'd not written very much, not okay. for publication anyway.
Gotcha. So, and now you're back here. You obviously bought a place in Wyoming because you like it there so much. Where do you spend most of your time? Midwest?
Well, I'm now spending most of my time in East Hampton. The place in Wyoming is basically a vacation rental, and I go out in what is the shoulder seasons. So April, May, and then September, October, early November, possibly.
Yeah, you know,
I'm
we
not
were...
the great one for Wyoming winters.
It's pretty tough. It can be pretty brutal. However, you and I were talking the other day about the fact that in Jackson, where your story takes place, that the only day that it has not snowed is July 17th.
That's correct. Historically, the only day in that area of Wyoming that it's never snowed is July 17th.
Which I found that interesting. And then, of course, when I read the book, I know that Coop mentions that. He says, well, it can snow pretty much any old time here.
Yeah.
Do you remember him saying that?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Thank you. I do. And that I told you, if I recall, that I had left Montana one year in August, then it was snowing.
Yes, so, which is crazy.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you about your, I guess your models, where the characters of Coop and I don't know why her name is completely left my mind. What is
Kathy.
The girl's name? Yes. So where did these two characters come from?
Oh my goodness. I think they're composites. I mean, Coop just sort of developed out of a little lot of bits and pieces of guys I guess I've known. And
I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's not completely, you know, he's not warm and fuzzy.
Not hardly.
But and Cassie as well. I mean, it goes back to thinking about what the 60s and 70s were like and people I had known. And it just they just sort of, you know, get developed from those things. Neither of them were based particularly on any one person. That's for sure.
Oh, OK. Do you find that your characters as you're putting them together that Do they develop during your writing process, or do you already have their personalities formulated when you start?
They more or less develop, but I also hope that they, you know, mature and develop in the course of the book. I mean, I think they did. Coop certainly softens as time goes on, and he realizes all the mistakes he's made along the way.
Pretty much one on every page.
And she matures.
Yeah, she definitely does.
Yeah. So, yes, I mean, I hope that they develop in that way.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about something completely different. I want you to imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. That sounds like a perfect vacation spot, doesn't it?
Yes.
And it is for your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you're going away for a one- or a two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dogs return home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? Check them out at their website, alldogsrule.com, or give them a call at 805-524-1100, and your dog will thank you. All right, if you're just joining us, first question is, where the heck have you been? We are the Writer's Block. We're talking to Andrea Downing, and she has written a really nice romantic novel, a Western novel called Always on My Mind. And, you know, one of the things we'd like to find out on this show, Andrea, is a little bit about your process. You know, how often do you write? Where do you write? What inspires you to get going? So tell us a little bit about that.
Well,
I wanted to put you on the spot, so I hope I was
successful. Yeah, you have.
Okay.
I get ideas from all sorts of places. I mean, as I said, Always on My Mind came from the fight that I read about at the local dance hall. Loveland was completely different. I mean, Loveland came from discovering that the British had run most of the big cattle companies here in the 1860s. And so that developed into Loveland. I mean, they're all different. Somebody says something to me and gives me an idea. So then I have this idea and I let it mature in my brain and think of it. And then I finally sit down and write. And usually once I have a story, I'm a fairly fast writer if the story is, you know, pretty clear. I have struggled with a few things and given up, and I might go back to them. But, yeah.
When you sit down to write at that time, because you said you let this kind of, you know, percolate in your brain for a while, when you actually sit down to write, do you already know where you're going to end up?
Well, I used to say I always had the ending. That I, you know, before I start writing, I would always know what the ending would be. And that is true for the most part. I think maybe there was one story that I didn't know the ending. But, you know, it's like a journey. You have to know where you're going. Unless you're just freewheeling, and writers don't usually freewheel like that.
Yeah, Jim has talked about writers who are pantsers, where they just write by the seat of their pants. They just go.
And that's exactly me. Yes.
Okay.
You're either a plotter or a pantser.
Uh huh.
You either have the plot, and you know there are writers who write out everything completely. Every scene, every movement, practically. And then there are pantsers like myself who have a vague idea of what the storyline is and let the characters tell it. And my stories are mostly character-driven.
Okay. And when you... I mean, there's got to be times, I know, where you're... Like if you know where you're starting and you know where you want to end up, but you don't necessarily know how you're going to get there, there's got to be times when I'll bet you're frantically writing because you're in the zone. And there's other times where you maybe get stuck. Say, okay, I don't know where I want to take this now. So do you try and write every single day, or do you just write when the calling is there in your brain, or how does that work?
Well,
and understand, I'm asking because I'm not a writer. And so it's always fascinating to me to hear this.
Yeah. A lot of people say you should write every single day. You should journal. You should write every single day. I can't do that. I'm not, unless you want to count emails, I mean. I can't, you know, just sit down and write and write. I, you know, there's more going on in my head than there is on the page.
Mm-hmm.
So I may be very different in that way. But once I start a book or a story, I do like to get at it every single day. Once the, you know, the blank white pages got a few words on it, then I'm off.
Gotcha. You know, I had a question about, you know, this is a Western, I mean, it takes place in the 1970s, but it's a Western romance. And obviously, because we've got the two main characters meet in a bar, they get together, you know, we won't go through the whole story, but, you know, they fall in love. There's sex involved. And it was interesting to me to look at how much detail you put into the sex, the scenes of sex. And then I started thinking, okay, well, also books that have a lot of violence or gore, that can also be at different detail levels. And I was wondering, how do you know or decide how much is the right amount of detail that you want to put in, whether, like I say, whether it's going to be sex or gore, because it's got to be tempered to a certain extent. And I'm just curious how you decide what you want to do with that.
That's a very interesting question. I don't think that I do decide. There are writers who write Western romance who put absolutely no, you know, sexual content in their scenes at all. They write sweet romances. Mm-hmm. They may have kissing, but, you know, that's about as far as it goes. And they know what their audience is, and they know what they're aiming for. Mm. I don't write sweet romances, but neither do I write erotic.
No,
In actual fact, I prefer to call them love scenes rather than sex scenes, because I don't name body parts. The reader has a pretty good
idea. I saw the word breast in there a few times.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I did forget. Okay.
No, but I understand what you mean.
Yeah. And you know, there are people who go into a great deal more explicit description than I would ever do. I think it's up to the writer what you want to put in. And I thought one fairly decent love scene was, you know, enough. I think it's mentioned again, but it's not really as detailed as the first love scene. So,
well, you also mentioned that some writers, they know who their audience is and they know what they want. So do you write with your audience in mind, or do you write because it's how you want it to play out?
I write how I want it to play out. But there are people who aim specifically for either the sweet romance market or the Christian romance market or whatever. And they write accordingly.
So you just write it and it falls into whatever market's going to accept it.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. Good. I like that. I like that. That's, you're a rebel.
Well.
No, you don't belong with that?
I don't know whether I'm rebelling against it. I just feel that that's the way I write. I try and make it. Well, somebody used the word poetic about my writing once, but I don't think, you know, I don't go out and say, oh, I'm going to write something poetic. It's just the way I write. I don't like to go into detailed specifics, but I do like to have the love scene in.
Are you going to be moving into other genres?
Probably, yes. I never set out to actually write romance. I didn't wake up one morning and say, I'm going to write a romance, or I'm going to be a romance writer, or anything like that. Loveland was supposed to be part of a saga, a family saga, and it sold as a romance, and that sort of started me. It's a matter of the stories that come into your mind that you set out on paper. And the stories that come into my mind happen to be romantic. And they happen to be taking place in the West for the most part.
Okay.
But there are other things that are on, as you like to say, percolating in my brain at the moment. And mm-hmm. they have nothing to do with romance. And I have to see where they go.
Okay. That sounds exciting. So it's got to keep your interest in the writing there, because you don't know where it's going to go. So it's an adventure every time, I would think.
Well,
for
it
you.
Is. I mean, I for have you. To know, in the case of the story that I have in mind, it does have a beginning and an end, but it's a very difficult journey to get there. So it's like, you know, it's instead of going on highways all the way, it's sort of going on unpaved roads for the most part.
Okay. Well, that sounds like it'll be exciting for the reader also then.
I hope.
Got to sell another book too. When you sit down to write, do you have a goal at that particular time, what you want to accomplish, like at that particular sitting?
Well, a lot of people try and do a certain word count every day. I like to feel that I have got at least 1,000 words on the page, and that is not really very much. That's only just over 3 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm writing a book, you know, and get 1,000, but I've certainly had days when I've written a hell of a lot more than just 1,000 words. So, but you know, I would aim for that.
Gotcha.
Then I feel much better when I go over.
Sure, of course. Yeah, that's a little reward for yourself. What about editing? Do you do your own editing, or do you have an editor that you rely on? How does that work?
No, the publisher has an editor, supplies an editor. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, as I said earlier, I read it and reread it and correct it and change it and rewrite and so on. And then have my trusty beta readers read it, and I go back over their criticisms. And
then you tell them they're all full of crap and it's going to stay the way it is.
Well, I don't actually tell them that. You know, I say thank you very much, and I acknowledge them in the beginning of the book.
How many times do you have an editor come to you and say, you know what, this part of the story, I don't like this. I don't think people will accept this. We have to change it. I don't think it'll sell this way. Does that happen a lot?
I have a book out called Dances of the Heart, and the editor who was handling it definitely kept pointing out certain things that she didn't like and kept sending it back. She didn't believe this, she didn't believe that, I had to rewrite that. She was also into something called deep point of view. And so what I considered a brilliant opening line went out the window because it had they... and that wasn't the deep point of view, because it's either one person's point of view or another person's point of view, and they isn't one person.
Right.
So, and she was very, very critical of a lot of things. And, you know, I believe in the end, a lot of the book was better for her edit.
Okay.
Current editor is a little bit more on my wavelength, perhaps, and I get on with her really well, and I love it a bit. And you know, she hasn't really changed very much, so I'm very pleased.
Excellent. All right, we have to take one more break, and then we're going to come back and wrap things up. So you'll stick with us for another 5 or 6 minutes.
I will. Thank you.
Certainly. And you're listening to The Writer's Block.
You know, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. No. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, www.creative-edge.services.
We don't want life to pass anybody by. That's why you read, so you get as much as you can. If you're just joining us, you've only got a few minutes left with us. This is a writer's block. We're talking to Andrea Downing. And Andrea, the name of this show is called The Writer's Block. So one question that we always ask, have you ever had it?
Yeah, probably for about 30 years.
Well, you win the prize. Ding, 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 ding. That's the longest anyone ever suffered from that.
I have had writer's block.
And what do you do when that happens?
Wait, basically. Some people say that you should just write anything. In other words, go back to the journaling every day, and that prevents writer's block. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just sort of finally overcame it. I think it has to do with what's going on in my life. Like at the moment, I'm not writing. Thankfully, I'm still in edits for another book. So that's keeping me occupied. And, I'm waiting for the cover of the book and so on. And then hopefully I will settle down and have this story would have percolated, I'm hoping, and matured and, be pretty much a final product. And then I can get down to it. But everybody's different. I don't know about other people's writer's blocks, but certainly.
Well, some people we talk to have never experienced it, and we've had interesting comments about it. One person says, if you get writer's block and you don't know where you're going to go next, then kill somebody. Kill somebody in the book. Reality.
That sounded very exciting. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you get to a point, you just don't know where you're going, and then you just write and you say, and then the killings begin. And that just takes you in a whole new direction. You can go anywhere you want from there. But I want to, first of all, where can people find out about you, about your books? Where can they get them? Do you have an email address they can reach you if you they have comments on your books? Tell us all of that good stuff.
Right. Well, I have a comment page on AndreaDowning.com. Just my full name, no interruptions to it, AndreaDowning.com. And so they can reach me that way. And all my books are listed on my webpage. All my books are also listed on my Amazon page and in Goodreads. And they can buy the books, obviously, on Amazon, Goodreads, BookBub, just about any place. And I think some of them are available through the libraries now. So,
yeah, but that doesn't make you any money. You've got to sell the books. Sell them.
You're not kidding.
And it gets harder and harder every day, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To make money at this.
Yes. Yes, it does.
By the way, do you have any of your books on audio?
Yes, I do. Two of my novellas are on audio and very nicely read. One is Dearest Darling, which is a short book, historical Western romance. Well, they both are. And the other one is Lawless Love. It's also a historical Western romance, and they're both available on Audible.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we have reached the end of our time, but Andrea, I want to tell you, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on. If for no other reason, I love your English accent, and I could listen to you talk all night. I have been so fortunate. The last show I did was a lady from Florida with a wonderful Southern accent, and now I have yours, so I've been satisfied for the last 2 months now.
Well, good for you, Ron.
Listen, it has been a pleasure to have you on, and I wish you much success, and I hope you'll come back and visit with us again.
Well, I'd love to, and thank you so very much for having me. I've been really enjoyed this past hour or so. So thank you, and see you in Yellowstone, perhaps.
I hope so. I told you I'm going to be there in August. And
lucky you. Yeah.
And I know where Wilson is, too, so I can hunt you down now. No.
Well, okay, and go to the dance hall.
I'll start a fight. I'll go with some long hair and some bell bottoms and see what happens.
All right.
Andrea, have a great night. Thank you again.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you. Thanks very much again for having me.
Bye-bye. You bet. Bye-bye. So that was Andrea Downing, author of Always on My Mind. You should pick it up. It's a nice read. It's a good feeling book. The ending was great. The only thing I told Andrea about it is when I got to this what I didn't know was the last page, and I flipped the next page to see what happened next, and that was it. There was no more. But it was very satisfying. It was nice. So Always on My Mind, Andrea Downing. Next week, Jim will be back. I don't know who his guest is. Nobody tells me anything. I just show up and do this and then I'm gone. So, please tune in next Thursday. I've enjoyed, filling in for Jim these last couple shows and, looking forward to being back with him again. All of you have a great, great evening. Stay safe and, we're out of here.